Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
When I was working at Channel 7, I was friends with a young girl, and, you know, she would come in, and we would visit and talk and kind of flirt, and they would post your birthday. And so it was my birthday. She comes and she says, "Oh, happy birthday." I said, "Well, you know, I'm 65 today. I don't feel like it, and I don't think I act it, and I don't think I look it. Do you?" And she said, "Well, yeah."
So there you go. You got that going for you, which is nice.
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
Did he play like it is the question.
He didn't shoot 65, I can tell you that.
How'd he putt?
Love him to death. Missed some short ones, but we love Arch Campbell. Okay, live, plausibly live anyway, from the corner of Wisconsin Avenue Northwest and Jennifer Street Northwest, about a block and a half inside the district line in the capital of the United States of America, at Chatter, though you wouldn't know it from the sign, because the sign still isn't here.
We renamed
this restaurant a month and a half ago, and we still have the old Chad sign. And this is...
Brand confusion
is good. I can't tell you how actually annoyed I am at this. It is disheartening and it is angering.
Why don't we take a hammer to the sign? Time to fire someone, maybe?
I don't know. I mean, Trump there's nothing style. I can do about this. Gary Braun is here. Chris Saliza is here. Michael Kornheiser is here. Nigel is running the board. We have breakfast at 8 in the morning, and it's... You're hearing this at 11, so people are here for breakfast, which makes me happy after a long holiday weekend where nobody did any business because everybody went away. So I'm happy people are in here. This is to Jeff Kenton in Towson, Maryland, June 21 to 26. No, Jeff, only the 19th and the 20th and the 26th. Only the 19th and the 20th and the 26th. He will understand that. Hope to see you then. There's a lot to talk about today. A lot of things happened over the weekend, locally, nationally. Locally, you would say the Bryce Harper thing, that's a national story. That's very early on. But let us talk, because we've been away for a while, let us talk about what happened over the weekend. Let's start with Chris, because you went to see U2 in Texas.
Yes. Turn his mic on, maybe.
Yeah,
maybe. I mean, I like that move.
You hit the button.
Yeah, Little's everywhere rejoicing.
You've got one thing to do, Chris.
Well, the ratings just went up.
I know, that was actually a good couple seconds.
Exactly. Thanks for asking, Mr. Tony.
Yeah.
I flew with my wife and my children to Texas, and we went to see you too.
Did the kids go to the show?
Absolutely not.
Oh, okay. You said that like maybe they had.
So on Friday, I was unaware.
Because this is in-laws. You have in-laws there to babysit.
My wife's parents live there.
Yeah.
You know what the difference is between in-laws and outlaws, right?
One of them.
Outlaws are wanted.
Right.
Yeah.
I was like most things, I only paid like loose attention to the details of this. I knew we were going to Texas and knew we were going to see you too, but I hadn't really paid all that much attention to it. So we get on the plane and my wife says, "We have to be up at 4:30 tomorrow morning." And I was like, "What?" So on Friday morning at 4:30, we got up. We drove.
It's no big deal.
We drove to AT&T Stadium, house that Jerry built, and waited in line. So at 5, we were in line in the general admission line behind 1,000 other people. I'm not exaggerating. There were 1,000 people in front of us.
What time is the concert?
Is this
U2 took the stage at 9:10 p.m.
Did you have to be there that whole time?
Okay, so.
Why were you there? Just to pick up tickets at Will Call?
No, we were general admission.
Oh,
and my wife really wanted to get close. So we had no seat. You just go and stand.
Right. Yeah, it's just on the
floor. We're going to be there for 24 hours.
But you're allowed on the floor.
Let me remind you that my wife is beautiful and funny and great, and I love her, which is why I did this.
Right.
So we wait until 7. We get our wristband.
At 7 a.m.
So I've been in line from 5:30 to 7.
Okay.
So then we leave, and they say you got to be back here by 2.
Okay. So you're allowed. You don't.
So
have
we
to
leave.
This is
we
worse
come
than
back.
The wicked
at,
lottery.
We come back at 2.
You take a nap.
It was 95 degrees. We come back at 2. We wait from 2 to 4 outside of AT&T Park. We're like in this line from 1 to whatever.
So that you can be among the first
then
to get
we
in.
Go,
no band. No, and no woman no, is worth this. No. Yeah.
Then we go into the bowels of AT&T Stadium at 4, and we wait from 4 to 5 in like the area that runs down to the general admission.
You're in a pen?
Are you drinking? Do you have like a hip flask or anything?
You can't really drink because you can't go to the bathroom because you can't lose your place in line. It's a really great situation.
Oh,
then at 5,
this is awful.
At 5,
great plan.
At 5, they let you onto the floor by your number. So you go and you stand
for a concert that starts at 8?
Now,
9.
Well, no, they came on at 9. There's
the Lumineers were the opening act. They came on at 7:10. So I stood in one place from 5 to 7. And you can't move because if you move...
By the way, if people wonder what this ambient noise is, they're excavating.
That's just my voice.
Yeah, they're excavating in the restaurant at the moment.
You can't move because if you move, you lose your spot. You can't eat. You can't drink. So
this is awful.
The Lumineers came on at 7, and then U2 came on at 9.
Did they do the Ho-Hey song?
They did.
Ah, very good.
And then U2 came on at 9:10, and my wife was, you know, weeping and thrilled. And we have great pictures that I've sent.
The pictures were awesome.
I mean, we're from here to the former Orange Cone.
You're that close.
Yeah, I mean, we're 5 feet away, 10 feet away.
So I get that made it all worth it?
No.
No, that's
no, not at all.
So how long did they play?
What made it worth it? 9:10 to 11:10.
Right, okay.
What made it worth it was that my wife was, you know, this is something that my wife had always wanted to do.
An incredible sacrifice by you.
And so we did it.
Well, plus, I'm sure you got to hear Bono wax poetic about all things political, right?
Absolutely.
Did you at any point yell, shut up and sing?
No, because I was so concerned with not passing out from the pain in my legs.
Wait, but this isn't even the story I heard.
I know, yeah.
I got a text from Rob Stronach that you lost your license.
Okay, so I didn't lose my license. My wife did. Because on Saturday morning, we wake up and she's like, hey, are you still holding my license? Because, of course, you can't bring any bags into AT&T Stadium. Nothing.
Right.
Particularly after the Manchester
But you said you brought your wife. Yes. Boom. Roasted.
I just got beat.
Just kidding,
I got
Jake.
Beat. So I was holding her driver's license.
Right.
Which, you know, every 2 seconds she would turn around and scream, make sure you're taking a picture of this. So I kept taking my phone out of my pocket. So at some point,
I
think I dropped it out of there.
Oh, no.
Okay. And so I lost it. But interesting
hers
fact.
Hers and yours.
No, I had mine, of course.
Okay.
Interesting fact. You can get on,
security.
You can get on planes far easier than they lead you to believe without
your
license.
That's very comforting.
Yeah.
Thank you.
It takes 5 extra minutes.
What's the process?
You tell the TSA people, you go up to security and you say, we don't have our driver's license.
I'm important, let me on
several
now.
People, I put it on Twitter, which is why Rob Stronach knows.
Right.
I said, how do you figure this out? And several people said, not kidding, now is the time to say, do you know who I am? I was like, that's the worst idea ever. I'm not famous like you. I mean, people be like, I have no idea
who you are. I know someone
whose
wife said that once in an effort to get expedited to first
class. Oh, really?
I mean, like, that's the worst idea to get a TSA
Tell
agent
them
on your side.
We're in first class.
Yeah,
that works every time.
Why don't you be quiet?
Yeah, exactly. So,
so how do you do it?
So you just go up to security and you say, we don't have our driver. You can check in without your driver's license, which I didn't even know.
Yeah,
you can get your tickets.
Yes, how do they verify your identity?
Yeah.
They don't. They just give you your ticket.
What's not a good idea?
They say, go to TSA when you get up there and tell them you don't have a license. They make it seem like you could never get on a plane without your driver's license or a passport.
Well, can I ask a question about that?
Yeah.
Famously, Keith Olbermann has no driver's license.
Right.
He doesn't know how to drive. He has no driver's license.
Does he have a passport?
I guess. I don't know.
So,
if I knew you were flying to Dallas today, I could go a couple hours before I know you're going to get there and say, hey, I'm Chris Saliza.
Yeah.
I'm going to announce that on my ID. Okay,
Does your wife have any other picture IDs?
She had her... She didn't show this to get the ticket.
Student
but
ID?
She has... She has her ATM card, has her picture on it.
Oh,
she has credit cards.
Okay.
But you don't really need to show that stuff until you get to TSA.
Right.
At which point you say, we don't have a driver's license. They call
a
supervisor, and they kind of shepherd you through security.
Oh,
you're subject to a pat down.
Well,
it's like 5 extra minutes.
Okay.
By the way, thanks to all the shout out to all the Twitter people who said, "Well, why don't you just show your passport?" Because I'm the kind of person who brings our passports on a trip to Texas.
Well,
I love
who
that.
You don't
I love
need
that
a
as a solution.
No, you're in America.
I love that as a solution. Well, then why don't you show them your passport? Because I'm not in my house. Why don't you just bring my passport?
Did the ID show up? Did you call AT&T?
Well, the helpful thing is that AT&T is closed. AT&T Stadium is closed from Friday night all the way to Tuesday morning. So that was really helpful.
So you don't know if it ever showed up. But you had a good time.
Oh, it was. I mean, my legs still. I'm not kidding. My legs still hurt, and it was a total 100% nightmare.
How was the show, though? How was the actual performing of?
It was great. They played the Joshua Tree. I mean, that's this tour. They're playing the Joshua Tree, so it was amazing.
And how many songs did they get in before he started telling you about saving the world?
Oh.
Because that's his move.
Two, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's two.
Well, Bruce Springsteen does that, too.
That's fine.
He does. I mean, look, you know what Bono's politics are. He's not going to be like... He was less overtly political than the Lumineers. He didn't take shots at Trump. The Lumineers did.
Right.
He didn't take shots at
Bono,
Trump.
Bono, actually, my understanding is, and I'm not kidding when I say this, that U2 has an album about to be released that was queued up, and they said, when is it dropping? And they said, well, it was supposed to come out, I think, right around now.
They are redoing it because of Trump.
And he said, well, because of recent political events, that's I want to add some stuff that's and do some stuff to it.
But, I mean, he is someone who has a... Look, I actually think, say what you will about musicians and their various flights of fancy in politics, the one campaign, the one they've done a lot of good. They've raised much money.
Oh,
he, makes
not,
point,
not
hate, he makes the point. He makes the point about
I
you know HIV to... AIDS, but I don't want to hear about it.
Well,
I want you to
point.
Sing.
Yeah, I bought this ticket to hear you sing.
Some amazing pictures. Gary's seen some. Michael and okay.
Yeah, I mean they were
some.
Close.
I mean not, we were really close.
They were really close.
Now, Gary, you went. Hopefully
not quite as close as I'll be at Coldplay at Levi's after Jamie Brandt hooks me up. But he was still close.
So you had a reunion that I went to also. Why don't you talk?
I did. Well, right here at Chatter on Saturday. Saturday night was the 25th anniversary of the launch of WTEM 570 AM, which was the sports talk radio station launched here in D.C. in May of 1992. And Bob Snyder, who I guess, what was he at the time? He wasn't the general manager at the time.
No, he was an assistant.
Like Redskins sales director.
Yeah, he was involved in sales and an assistant general manager.
And he's now working with Bob Ryan's podcast.
Yeah, local podcast.
Going
to do one with Andy Poley.
Hometown podcast. Going to do a DC version with Andy Poley here. He was kind enough to put this thing together. And a couple dozen of us, I would say, showed up here at Chatter for a fine time. Mr. Tony certainly made an appearance.
I stayed for about an hour and a half. I didn't remember... When I saw their faces, I remembered their faces. I didn't remember their names.
Well, there were maybe, let's see, I'd say eight of us from the programming side and the other, what did I say, 22?
Sales.
So the other 18 would have been salespeople.
Yeah.
And, but yeah, it was fond memories. I mean, we were all much younger then.
A couple of guys very wasted.
Yes.
Couple guys Scary. Really.
One of them?
No.
No, I was not.
I mean, like, really?
Not like usual.
I don't like the beer here. But,
Hopefully they weren't driving.
I'm just kidding. Actually, I think if Michael, drives. If it is you who should be commended, actually very impressed with the beer list here, which I hadn't really looked at because normally we do this show a little early in the morning, even for me to be drinking beer. But yes, by the end of the night, Tony, there were a couple.
But it's very nice. Very nice to
were
see
well
them.
Away. Yeah, really
very
nice
to
see
them.
Everyone. It was great.
I left at the right. I stayed about an hour and a half and got out before it got really messy, and that was the right thing to do.
Anyone you were particularly surprised and or happy to see?
Kevin Kiley.
And or unhappy to see?
No, happy much to see Kevin Kiley, who I didn't even know lived in the area.
Right.
So that was very nice to see Kevin Kiley.
Very happy to
the
see
The sales
that
guys
well.
Were, you know, they were pleasant, but I didn't have any real interaction
there
with them.
There wasn't a ton back
You know,
in the
I
day.
Used to go to the radio station, do my show, and leave. I mean, I didn't know. We were in a different
well, you had
area.
You had a whole other job.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, like, job. As you continue to, but.
Well, this is funny. We were just, like, remembering some of this stuff, which seemed crazy. So, Tony... At the start, you were 10 to noon, but then later the show went 10 to 1, but Tony had to be at his Washington Post desk by 1. So what we would do is we would start recording the show at 9.
Start recording the third
We
hour.
Would do the third hour from 9 to 10,
I
and then 10 to noon we would
after.
Do live, and then we would rerun.
Really
the...
sounded fresh in the third hour, because that's what we started.
Because it was fresh.
But, you know, there was like, the internet wasn't exactly crushing it then, so it was rare. On occasion, we would get burned by a breaking news story or something, but you could... Otherwise, get away with that. It was really fun to sort of reminisce and
very nice.
Hang out with those
people. I have just one other
And the restaurant, by the way, did a great job, I thought.
Yeah.
One other day
Yes, you
drinking.
Can have your parties here.
Yeah.
We're open. We cater. We can. Yeah. You can have your parties here.
One other day Chatter. Drinking mention that I forgot to. In the line, Gary reminded me of it. In the line at 5:15 a.m., it is dark. In the U2 line, I'm walking down the line. There are two dudes drinking Dos Equis. At 5:15 a.m.
I don't always wait in line all day for tickets.
I mean, that is
but when I do. I
that
drink
is grim.
That's
dark.
And by the way, didn't you mention to me last night that you had a sick man on your return flight or something like that?
Oh yeah, sick guy on the return flight made me think of you guys.
Like vomiting?
Coughing,
you mean? Or
no, it wasn't as bad as yours, but the guy sitting caddy
emergency.
Corner next to me, he's one row up on the end. He's right in front of my kids and my wife. I don't sit with them. Obviously, I'm in first. So. when I go back to see them, suddenly I go to the bathroom. I come back. There's like four flight attendants around this guy. And he's like, I mean, he's young, but he's like my age, 40. He's sweating profusely.
Okay.
And I find out from my wife he has passed out in his seat. So he's got like an ice pack.
You might have to land.
So my immediate concern is obviously for me, how does this affect my life? I'm looking to see how far we ended the flight.
Give him a parachute.
What was DB Cooper. So, what was fascinating to me was that I thought, because I'm a paranoid hypochondriac, I assumed he'd be monitored the whole time. They just left him alone. They were like, let us know if you need anything. I'm like, this guy just passed out.
My first thought when I hear that? Heroin-filled condom in his rectum, and it burst. That's right where I go when I hear something like that.
They said the air was thin, and he might have been out partying. But it could have been that. Yeah. But yeah, it's very creepy. I felt very unsettled. I checked on him like multiple times.
Yeah, afterwards. When there's someone like it's very unsettling. Alone flight, it's unnerving.
And Michael, what did you do over the weekend?
I played in the Memorial Day golf event over at Columbia Country Club, and you might see my name in the local sports section of your Washington Post.
Michael won. Michael alone. Michael,
come on.
They had assembled. Let be fair. Talk about the team you had assembled.
Well,
because it was the favorite
dream team.
I was late to the party. I will say this: I was the Kevin Durant of this already established contender.
You could do worse.
So we were playing with Billy Peel. That people may remember that he was my partner for the 18 matches this spring. Alex Tenhove and Ralph Blasi. So we had
these are good players.
We Blasi. Basically had the A team in our foursome. So we had a few looks as we were going around the golf course yesterday.
Yeah, they were the like.
Wait, it looks
the
like
pros.
Did you win by a bunch?
Did you win by a bunch?
Looks like what are you guys doing together? This doesn't seem right.
Well, if you want to get
ooze.
Together, you can get together. Yeah. Right?
Did you win by a bunch?
No, we only won by two for the gross. We did not obviously win net.
Can't win net.
What, so what was your net? Right. You shot a 62 gross.
62 gross. 62 net.
Okay. Yeah, well, there you
glassware,
go.
Yeah. Shop credit?
No glassware, which was disappointing, but we did get some shop credit.
That's always good. Nice.
No, I played and did not get any shop
credit. So you played with Team Coco?
Out of the money.
We played with Team Coco. I love everybody dearly. We were not up to the challenge. We left it in the green
How
room.
Did you play?
What did you guys
I did not
net?
Play
Let's focus on you.
Well. I didn't play well.
What did we call?
I'm no good. We shot 62 net, which is not good enough to get prizes.
That's not terrible.
It is terrible. We've shot 57 before. This was bad. We did not have a good day, which is okay.
Okay.
We enjoyed each other's company as we always do. And we
did Arch get hit with any golf balls?
No, Arch was not crushed by any golf balls.
Golf.
No, he was not.
If he was, wouldn't you see him on today's rundown?
There's many, many things to talk about.
Yet you choose these three stories to start with.
That's your Tuesday show.
This is a long. We're going to do a long show today.
People tuning in for Bryce Harper, get the Saliza U2 story.
Michael, running to stand still with Saliza.
Michael Wilbon will join us when we return. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Saliza mentioned going to Jerry World and standing online to get tickets. Tickets were waiting for him. SeatGeek is one way that you can get tickets. Buying tickets to sports and concerts can be complicated, especially if you have to stand online for, I don't know, 12 hours. But there's a better, simpler way to buy with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to live events. With SeatGeek's seamless mobile experience, you can buy and sell tickets in just two taps of your phone. SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There's nothing quite like seeing your favorite team or musician in person, Bono and U2 and The Edge. And SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. SeatGeek saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. And to get you the most bang for the buck, SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. And perhaps SeatGeek will provide you with a masseuse in case your legs go numb standing there waiting. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of ticket, from sports and concerts to comedy and theater. And best of all, listeners to this fine quality podcast get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. All you do is download the SeatGeek app, SeatGeek, the SeatGeek app, and you enter the promo code Tony today. That is promo code Tony for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is Nate Harrar, who goes by the stage name of Dalton. This is called For the Last. We have played Nate Harrar before. Dalton. Makes us very happy. This is good news.
Great.
This guy's better at his job than I am. He plays in Michael Wilbon, who is in Arizona on his way to Golden State if the NBA Finals ever start, because it's been a long time. I played a lot of golf over the weekend, and I played badly. How about you?
Oh, I played worse than you did. I'll bet you that.
Did you? I played badly.
Yeah, no, I played off. I played one day pretty decently. And I knew I would. I hadn't played 18 holes since having my knee scoped.
Yeah.
And, you know, it takes a little bit. I don't have any discomfort or injury. I don't feel pain. But I'm just not playing well, so I got to do something about that. And I had a little bit of time, like you said, Tony. This is like bowl season, you know, between the end of the regular season in college football and the bowl game. This is the professional sports equivalent of that before we get to the finals.
This is interesting that you call it bowl season, because I think that, and I'm not going to go deep in the NBA now, but I would tell you that the playoffs, they have been lopsided so often that it feels like bowl games. You know what I mean? They haven't. I don't expect that to happen now. I hope not. I don't even care.
No.
You know what? If it is lopsided and one team is that great, good. Good. That's fine. I'm fine with it.
Yeah, this to me is, it doesn't have the sociological impact, cultural impact, but it's sort of today's, you know, locale version. This is Ollie Frazier. Put the big boys out there. Let's see them.
Yeah,
come out there.
I agree.
And let's see the best you got. I don't care. I didn't want to see. Once we got, you know, I didn't think this would happen. But once,
I know.
You know, now that they're out there, let's see what they got. I didn't want to see any upset once the playoffs started. And I'm glad these two are out there.
By the way, how hot is it in Phoenix? How hot this weekend? What's the high? 95?
It was in the 90s up where I am in Carefree. I'm sure it was around 100. Actually, Tony, there's usually a 10-degree difference between Scottsdale, as people know it, and sort of where I am, which is about 25, 30 minutes north. So I had a couple of days when I was here. Friday, it wasn't even 90 degrees. It was in the 80s, which is you know, sort of a stunner for here. So it's been great. It's just, you know, there were days, I told Nigel, I haven't seen a cloud since I left Washington.
Okay.
We got some if you need them, Mike.
Yeah, we've got
a lot now.
We'll save them for you.
So let me ask you a question. Have you looked at, it happened yesterday that I got back from playing golf, and I put on the Nats game, and the Nats were playing in San Francisco, and they were wearing sweatshirts, and this was in the afternoon, Mike. This was in was 1 o'clock in the afternoon in San Francisco, and it looked to be beautiful, but maybe in the 40s it looked so cold.
No, it was probably around 60. That's what it was. I've been in and out of the Bay Area the entire spring. And there's been a lot of days where it's just beautiful, and you think, whoa, I could use a sweater out here. And it's been around 60 a lot. And that's all it's going to be this coming week, Tony, when I get there tomorrow. We'll be in the low 60s every day. So, yes, I got to pack completely differently than what I've been wearing here in Arizona, where I've been for the last, 5 days since the conference finals ended. And it'll be in the low 60s. It'll be beautiful. But, you've been to San Francisco enough. You know,
it gets cold.
It can get warm in certain times of the year. So it can get warm, and particularly in the late summer, meaning, September.
I remember very, very well. We had a Monday night football game. It was an exhibition game in San Francisco. So this makes this early August, at a time where in Washington – it's 95 degrees. This is early August. It was so cold, I went out that day. I went to a department store and bought a cashmere sweater. And it was early August.
Did you say cashmere?
Cashmere.
Well, August is the worst. August is the worst month. I mean, if you think it's summer, you get on a plane and you better check your daily forecast or you're a moron.
It's just...
I think most of the clothes I've purchased outside of D.C. and Chicago have been in San Francisco because I'm freezing.
You're not prepared. All right, let me get to the two stories that are uppermost in our minds, I'm sure. One is Tiger Woods and one is Frank DeFort. So we will start with Tiger and the DUI and the mugshot. Now, nobody looks good in a mugshot. But that's a really bad look. What are your thoughts on this?
That's a really bad look. I mean, I got up, you know, I got up yesterday, and I'm, you know, it was pretty early here, and I was playing golf early for me, which means any time before, you know, 1 p.m. So I was going out at about 8 a.m. here in Arizona and turned on ESPN, and boom, there it is. And, you know, you just shake your head. I didn't want to talk about it. I didn't want to talk about it. I know Tiger Woods. I mean, I know him. I know him professionally, obviously, mostly. And there was a period for about, I don't know, 5 years where I socialized with Tiger Woods because I'm, you know, everybody knows I'm close with Charles Barkley. And at one point, Charles and Tiger were close. And I was in the company of dinners and at a golf course. I'm not going to say I was playing with Tiger because I wouldn't do that. There was no point. You know, at night after NBA games, Tiger used to like to come to NBA playoff games. And he'd be a guy who'd poke his head in the door and say, hey, where are we going, guys? And so I got to know him a little bit. And this whole thing has been unspeakable for me, this whole thing since 2009. But this, I mean, this.
This is bad.
So I was on the way to a golf course, and again, to be candid, I, you know, I'm also a member, Tony, as you know, at Scottsdale National.
Yep.
And I'm a member there because Tiger Woods took me there. I met him there when I was working on a book with Charles Barkley. And Tiger said, well, come over and meet me at this place. We'll hang out a little bit, hit some balls, and we'll talk there. And I went there in 2004. And I was like, oh, my God, God, this is the most beautiful place I've ever seen. And I'm a member there now, you know, because Tiger Woods made the introduction. And I went there and went in the front door, and there were guys there just going. Tiger had a locker there. I don't know if he still has a locker there now. But his niece, Cheyenne, plays out of there, I'm pretty sure still. And you just go, I don't know. I don't want to talk about it. Because what am I going to say? What are you going to say? Well, I'm going to have some insight into what Tiger was doing. No, I mean, it's just another. He's not the first guy to have a DUI. He's not the last. He's not the most famous person to have a DUI, although he's probably in the group because he used to be one of the most famous people in the world. Maybe still is. But there's no insight. There's nothing I can hear. I don't want to hear from any members. Everybody has a story. There's a few guys left who are, you know, members when he would come around. And what are you supposed to say? It's just another thing in a string of things that make you say, what the hell happened to this guy's life and career?
Yeah. No, I know. And the first thing that I thought of, and I was on the golf course, and my caddy, Julian, we were on, I don't know, it had to be about 11 o'clock in the morning Eastern. And Julian was looking at his phone and said to me, you might want to know this, Tiger Woods just got popped on DUI. I said, what?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
So, and I immediately thought of this. I mean, I immediately thought, sure, you know, okay, this happened. But then I thought about all of the painkillers he must be on. And that led me to this other thing. I don't know that you can get off these painkillers. I don't know that you can. And even if he says, my back feels great, you develop psychological and maybe even physical need for these things. I know that every single time I go to play golf, and this is very, very small, I take Advil, whether I think I need it or not, because it just became part of my routine. And I wonder, Mike, I wonder if he can ever get off these prescription drugs. I do.
You know, Tony, I'm going to say something now that's going to, you know me my entire adult life.
Yeah.
And what I'm about to say right now, I mean this. And I know what I do professionally, and I know we got to talk about this today, this morning. We're going
to
talk about it again this afternoon on
PTI. Yeah, you have to.
Tony, I haven't wondered about any of this.
Okay.
I haven't wondered about, I don't know what he's on painkillers. I don't know. I'm not going to say I don't care. I don't wonder about it. As far as I'm concerned, he had 4 red wines and got in the car and shouldn't have. I don't know. I haven't even wondered that. I've been around Tiger maybe when he had a drink or two, but not even two. I mean, I've been in restaurants when he was driving. And again, after NBA playoff games, you know, I don't know what he drinks. I don't know if it's a drink of choice. I don't know if he's like me and he has a Q-Royale three times a year, maybe more than that. And he got careless this time. I don't know. And I don't have any curiosity other than when we get to the bottom line, which is, what the hell is going on with this guy?
Yeah.
I'm curious about the big picture. I don't have any sense or any interest in what he was doing other than whenever there's a DUI, my whole thing is because I'm not a drinker, I have no tolerance. I have close to zero tolerance. Even in a place like Arizona where the cops in Scottsdale wait outside restaurants for people to come out who've had one beer, and your blood alcohol level can be 0.00 something, and they can put you in jail here in Arizona, and it's famously that way.
Wilbon, wasn't that Michael Floyd video like right outside the fashion square or the?
I think it was.
Yeah,
I think it was.
God, that was more than 0.00, Michael Floyd.
That was right outside Old Town.
That was. But my point is, I don't know what Tiger's deal is with alcohol. I've been around him socially. I've never seen him anywhere near tipsy, inebriated, sauced, slurring his word. Not at all. I don't know what this is. But again, have we heard an explanation yet? Have we heard has there been a posting on his website?
Yeah, yes. He has said alcohol was not involved at all. It was only prescription drugs.
Oh, wow.
That's what he has said. That's why I brought it up, because he said.
Right. Okay. I have no idea, but Tony, does that lessen you shaking your head seriously, when Tiger's name, and by the way, he will outrun this because people outrun stuff, the shelf life.
Yeah, Michael Phelps outran two of them.
That's right. Okay. So does this lessen you shaking your head when you hear his name? This guy was on the top of the mountain.
Yes. Yes.
And so that's what I care about and wonder about and just say, oh, my God, man, he just can't recover in a public way, in an athletic way, in a celebrity way, as just one of the most famous people in American life the last 20 years. And that's the part that grabs me.
You want to talk about DeFord?
Well, Tony, they were part and parcel for me because it was early in the morning. I don't know when Frank passed away in terms of what time that happened. But I had, people calling me and texting me. And I never got to know Frank DeFord.
I knew
Frank's work.
Yeah, I knew him.
As a journalist of anybody, a sports writer my age. And then I got to say hello to Frank. And I get to see him in press boxes, and I always loved that Frank dressed up.
He did. He did.
I loved that Frank was not part of the new wave of sports writers, 90% of whom look homeless, who look like bums. And you just want to walk up to them and slap them and say, hey, get dressed. Try it again. You're embarrassing your employer and your mother. You look like a bum. Frank DeFord was somebody who always stood out as somebody who thought a little bit of himself. He was obviously a spectacular talent, but I didn't know him. I didn't travel in that circle, Tony. I know that, and I thought of you because I know that Frank DeFord was someone you knew well.
Yes.
And, it certainly, Frank was a godlike presence on the East Coast. In terms of personally, Frank wasn't somebody you saw in Chicago press boxes.
No.
Or at games. He wasn't part of
that
team.
Not a game guy. He was a profile guy, not a game guy.
And so Frank knew who I was. And it was an ego boost to me when I was 24 years old or 25 years old. Frank DeFord would be in a press box or in a locker room and knew who I was. But I never had dinner with him. I never was in any sort of close company. Mm. But, he was. That did not take away from the fact that Frank DeFord was a godlike figure for anybody who does what we do for a living. And I hope that people who are slovenly dressed and have some talent and now do what he did for a living, Google him today or go read some of the obits. I'm sure the New York Times has.
Sally wrote a beautiful piece.
Sally's piece.
Sally wrote a beautiful piece.
Good, good, good. And you know, Sally would be a person who knew him
very much because of Dan.
I did not know Frank, but I knew him in the way that you could look at him and admire him and think, "I'm glad that I do what that guy does."
Yeah. I hope we get the chance to do Melancholy Happy Trails to Frank, because I really
absolutely know
him well, and he was a giant. All right, I'll talk to you later. And when are you going to San Francisco tomorrow?
Tomorrow, Tony. Okay. I'm gonna go out and you know, there's some media things going on tomorrow. I probably shouldn't mention one thing I'm doing: sitting down for a conversation with a member of the Warriors.
Okay.
So tomorrow it sort of kicks back up in terms of the interest we'll have. You know, there'll be sound bites, and people will say how much they respect the other, although I think they do, in a way that the Lakers and Celtics did in the 80s, but they also hated each other to some great degree.
In the way that Bryce Harper and Hunter Strickland
did.
Yeah,
we got a lot to talk about today. That was...
See, let me just say this in closing. I got to say this. See, this is why, you know, I say this on PTA all the time. If I'm a hitter, And Hunter Strickland does what I do. See, I'm going with a bat to the mound. And I don't understand why hitters would throw a helmet. I'm going to throw my bat.
Oh, he didn't throw a helmet anywhere near him. He went. He threw the helmet away.
I think he was trying to throw the helmet at him.
No,
and it slipped out of his hand.
I don't think so.
I'm not throwing a helmet. My bat barrel is going to be thrown at his head.
That's like a 200-game suspension.
He threw a weapon at my head.
That's.
I'm going to throw a fist? No. I'm going to Johnny Roseboro him. And there's going to be a bat upside some part of his body. This is insane. Why guys go out to the mound without a bat? It's at the very least a Burt Campanaris, Laren LeGros situation. But more importantly, it is John Roseboro. He is going to feel wood, baby.
Thank you. I'll talk to you later.
And by the way, I don't know if you know this, the Jets, after seeing Bryce Harper throw the helmet, they signed him to a 10-day contract.
Good one. Yes.
All right, we will get out of here. We will come back with news. I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Earlier in the show, we played Nate Harar. This is his brother, Jackson Harar. His band is called Burn the Ballroom, which is a very cool name for a band.
Yeah, I like that.
The name of the song is Crazy. The Harar family.
Talented.
Pretty talented.
Talented family. And again, people can hear all these songs from beginning to end at the end of the podcast, which was a Bill Isaacson innovation. Bill is currently in Spain. Last night he texted me when he was beginning dinner at 11 o'clock at night, Spain time. And I told him, do not need emergency surgery in the morning in Spain, because everybody is out all night long. Michael, if people want to send us their music, how do they do it?
As always, they can email jingles@tonykornheisershow.com.
And we have an announcement for listeners, particularly listeners who are fond of, as they should be, Johnny O Clothing. And if you noticed over the weekend, for example, Webb Simpson was in Johnny O. A bunch of people. I was in Johnny O at the tournament.
My 8-year-old was in Johnny O.
Nice.
Thanks for this show.
My winning team was given Johnny O.
Michael outfitted everybody in Johnny O, and we have a deal. Go ahead.
Yes, we are celebrating Father's Day with a new push, and this is going to celebrate my father, as we are happy to announce the promo code is Dr. Tony. And this will give you...
Doctor is in.
This will give you enough of a discount.
Dr. Tony? Or spell it out.
Dr. Yes. Well, we had to save some letters, and this is Tony with a Y.
Six wide. All right.
And this is enough of a discount to get you, Tony, into the store. So this is 30% off.
I would go. I go 30.
This is valid through 6/19, which I assume is Father's Day. And I am going to... We've been asked a lot what we recommend. So we've picked out a few pieces, including the Redondo Polo, which the great Jack Vardiman was wearing in studio 2 weeks ago, which is an old-school classic polo. For the golfer, we have the Atwater Polo. Again, people have been asking about what to wear on the golf course, so I'm recommending the Mulligan Golf Short. And if you want sort of a transition pant that takes you off the golf court, you should check out the Marin Pant and... There's a great linen shirt. I have the color of the Cayman shirt. We have a blue one for you, Dad.
Fantastic.
That is a great summer weight dinner shirt that'll take you through those summer
months.
Oh,
that Redondo and Michael, polo is
let
nice.
Let me just piggyback. You said,
we're selling
that
Johnny O
it
here.
It runs through the 19th?
Yes.
Okay, so Father's Day is the 18th. So you can actually hold out.
And
if your family screws it up like mine does every year and doesn't get you what you actually want, then Monday you can go hook yourself up.
We don't just flack for them. We all have and love it. Yeah, I mean, I wear mine all the time.
And we are trying to take some photos in our Johnny O to share. So we'll get Dr. Tony in his.
I wore it yesterday.
What a great coat.
I didn't hit it the way I wanted to hit it. Mm. Nigel has news for us.
I do indeed, Mr. Tony. And before we start, if you don't mind, can I plug something that I did over the weekend?
Yes.
I actually wrote a little bit. You know,
I read it.
Occasionally I write for a website. My friends run the Daily Caller. I wrote a piece on a great American hero that nobody's ever heard of. He fought in the Battle of Midway. Chris Saliza. No, it was John Waldron. He was just a brilliant man and
good.
A very courageous
man. So on the Daily Caller.
Daily Caller, I recommend you go check that out.
I searched Nigel and couldn't find it.
Well, yeah, what was that?
I'd run another pin name. But I want to talk about the Nationals, Mr. Tony. Who cares that they won the game? That's not what anyone's talking about. Some bad blood between Hunter Strickland and Bryce Harper that dates back 3 years ago to the playoffs when Harper hit a couple of home runs off of Strickland.
There's two outs.
Two outs, nobody
there's
on.
There's nobody on base. This is the most deliberate.
He hit him on purpose. Yeah.
He threw right at him,
yep.
not to kill him, but threw it at 97 right at his hip and hit him. It bounced to the mound.
Oh, it must have hurt like hell.
Yeah. Whoa.
And Hartman did not take this
is not ordered by a manager.
No.
This is totally on his own. This is Strickland on his own.
That's why Posey lets him go.
Posey does not stop him.
Right. Posey doesn't stop him. Bochy, after the game, said, it looks bad. Like, it looked bad. Strickland looked like he was trying to hit him.
They diffused it a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, by just basically letting the guy go out there.
Bryce Harper ran out there and started throwing punches. And Strickland was ready and was throwing punches himself. In one of the best parts of it, Samardzija and Michael Morse collide and knock each other down. They were going for Harper. Harper's not liked.
No,
he's not.
No, in a fight like that, those dudes are going at Harper. Yeah, I mean, they're trying to tackle him. Yeah, no question.
Strickland was so crazed, it took three giant bodies.
That was the oddest.
He was off the field. His legs were in the air.
He was
screaming at them. I looked it up because I wanted to. He's 6'4".
I saw this live.
6'4".
Just by chance.
220.
just by chance. It was in the middle. I had come back from playing. I was not yet ready to go out and watch Michael in the last few holes. Where, by the way, just to be accurate, Billy Peel turned to me at one point and said, "You're making us nervous. Can you leave?" Remember that? That
was yes. And he's a former pro, so yes. I think he can handle your presence.
Were you loudly clearing your throat?
No. Huh? I was just there.
Is this your ball? It struck my foot.
But in any case, I happened to watch this and it was crazy. And FP right away said Harper was completely justified in going out there.
I mean, he hit him on purpose, 100%.
Yeah, but they're going to lose. We have no idea.
We talked about
it. We have no idea at the moment what that penalty is going to be. But it's always going to cost an everyday player more than a pitcher.
Right.
And he's a franchise player, and they're in a tough 10-day road trip.
So the good thing is, if it's five games, it's going to end with the Oakland series, which is a sort of a basement dweller team. So you can carry it out there.
Yeah.
The sad thing is, if you're the league looking at this, you have one of your superstars who is going to sit out on the West Coast, where those kids are only going to see him potentially one time this year, and the optics of that to me are
he should
well, maybe
not
he
get pl- this.
Maybe he plays pending appeal.
He should get fewer games. Than Strickland. This is absurd.
And my knee-jerk is sort of the same as Michael's. I thought five games seems about right, except there is the one extenuating circumstance. I guess different people are seeing it differently, and that's what was the deal with the helmet? Because I thought Bryce Harper is throwing his helmet at Strickland in an attempt to kill him. That's what I thought.
But
I thought he just threw it so hard and it slipped out of his hands. and he missed.
I'm
but
with
so
you,
I,
Gary.
He's an angry guy. I think he throws the helmet away. One, we know he likes to show off his hair for
no
every single photo
yes,
op.
He does.
No and
question
And two, I think he's hair. So angry that he knows he has a weapon in his hand, and he wants to get that weapon away from the scene. So I think he's
so you
purposely
think,
throwing it
I
away.
I agree with Michael. I did not think he was throwing it
if
at
If you
him.
Can throw an assist from right field to third base, I think you can hit somebody with a helmet from 6 feet away.
I'm with Gary. I thought he was trying to throw it at him, and it either slipped out of his hands or he misjudged the weight of it. But I would say, to me, it doesn't really matter because he didn't throw it at him. It went to first base. So, I mean, what did Clemens get
throwing
when
the bat?
He grabbed the
well,
bat?
Well, again, intent was reasonably questioned then. I mean, you know, because
right,
he said,
it wasn't at him.
Well, Nigel's making a face. I mean, I thought it was ridiculous, too. But people said, nah, he was throwing it away. And people were willing
clearly
to believe
he was
that.
Throwing
so,
it at him.
Yeah, I thought he was throwing it at him.
I don't
remember.
I liked what Dusty said. I mean, Dusty said, like, what's he supposed to do?
Be a punching bag?
I mean, you're like, you can take 97 or 98 in your leg on purpose when you know it's
so
on purpose?
Totally on purpose.
To Harper's credit, when he talked about it, he said, yeah, I mean, he deliberately hit me. I'm angry. But at least he did it the right way.
Right.
Not like Matt Barnes did to whoever it was.
Not throw his head.
That is the saddest part of this, that Harper is able to acknowledge there's a correct way to throw at somebody. Well,
yeah.
I think that just says more about the state of baseball. The winner in all this, Katie Ledecky, has invited Harper to hang out by the pool if he's suspended while on this West Coast trip.
Oh, instead, because Stanford, because she's out of
so I don't know about the code. I don't know all the rules on the code, but isn't there some statute of limitations? I mean,
it's three years. What are you doing?
When you win the World Series, or the World
that's what Harper said. He's got a ring.
Look
what is
your
his
ring.
Problem? Right. He's got a ring. By the way, lost on the weekend with the Nats. Coda Glover had two nice saves.
Yep. I believe I had that.
He had a really good save yesterday.
I believe he did.
Yep.
You know, after
he looks
the
good.
Eighth inning was a little bit dicey out there, but with Sean Kelly.
The game took such a weird turn, you know, I mean, because it was 3-0 and it was kind of rolling along at a, or 2-0 and it was rolling on a normal clip, and then that just happened and you were like, what the?
That's a
and
big
I mean,
deal.
So I think it's hard to restart after
that. What else you got?
Talk about the Indy 500, Mr. Tony.
But I mean, we all agree it was a punk move by Strickland.
Oh, 100%.
Yes. Come on. Totally.
The only person I think would have approved it would be Bob Gibson. We say, yeah, you probably should have thrown at him.
Bob Gibson would have. No, he wouldn't have waited 3 years.
He wouldn't if he would have thrown him the whole time.
Helps the team.
Takuma Sato is your Indianapolis 500 winner, holding off Helio
Castroneves. I love that race. I love to watch that race. And I was going around with a bunch of things on Sunday, including two golf tournaments and a Nats game. And by the time I got back to the Indianapolis 500, it was over. And I missed, apparently the last five laps were really good with Helio Castroneves. He got passed late, and this guy Sato, is that his name?
Yes.
And he won it, and I missed it. I missed it. I saw him pouring the milk on his head, and so I knew I missed it. So.
And some controversy after this, a Denver Post columnist by the name of Terry Fry, and I should say former Denver Post, wrote out on his Twitter, nothing specifically personal, but I am very uncomfortable with a Japanese driver winning the Indianapolis 500 during Memorial Day weekend. And the Denver Post said, apologized for the tweet sent out from one of the reporters, Terry Fry, does not reflect the standards and values of our organization, and he is no longer with the Denver Post.
There is a backstory here.
Yes.
The backstory is that his father fought in World War II.
Specifically in the Pacific
and was
theater.
In the Pacific.
Yes.
And my advice to anyone in this circumstance, and there are circumstances like this in the United States of America, where people who are our allies now were our mortal enemies in previous times. My advice is, when you feel that way, keep that to yourself. You don't go public with that. I mean,
right.
You just can't. You can't do that. You have to look to the better qualities that you have. And that was, I assume, Mr. Fry
has
realized that error.
He apologized profusely, and it was not in one of those, I'm sorry if I offended anybody.
No, I'm an idiot.
And he ended it by saying, again, I will say sorry, I know better, and I'm angry at myself because there was no constructive purpose in saying it,
Twitter.
And I should not have said it.
Don't make all your feelings public the time.
Good Lord, no.
Don't do it.
Good Lord,
what
no.
else?
A big weekend for Maryland. Men's lacrosse wins their first national championship in 42 years. And the women, I did not know this, they are a juggernaut. They won
all the time.
Third time in four seasons and 14th national title overall.
Undefeated season. culminating a perfect season. I believe.
Now, yes,
by the way, Maryland also a giant powerhouse in women's field hockey. I mean,
is that right?
Yeah, oh yeah, they're traditionally one of the top two or three teams.
So for years and years, I had to sit there and take it when Wilbon talked about how great Northwestern women's lacrosse was, and indeed they were. They were national champions, I believe, 5 years in a row at one point, and got so tired of going to the White House that they went in flip-flops one year, right. Which was, yes. You know, somewhat
I remember that
scandalous.
Story.
Somewhat scandalous. I didn't know. I guess Maryland has taken over for them. I did not know Maryland's men's lacrosse was that good. To me, it's always, you know, Princeton and Syracuse and Hopkins and people like that, none of which were in the semifinals. Denver was in the semifinals.
Denver's there
Ohio
frequently.
State was in the semifinals. I don't know who
Denver's
else.
There frequently. Maryland's always a top-ish program.
But good for them. Good for
but
Maryland.
They had not, I believe they had not won the national championship. Maryland men in a while.
72, I think.
They had been to the finals either 11 or 12 times and lost each time in the interim. So good for them.
Susan Lucci.
What else? Yes. Or PTI.
Kevin
PTI.
Kevin Kisner wins the Colonial. I know you want to talk about that.
Well, only because I was watching it, and Kevin Kisner on the 18th hole needed a par to win. Jordan Spieth was one down.
Well, there were a bunch of guys at nine.
At nine, yeah. And his second shot was not on the green. He was about 30 feet short of the green, and he took out what is called the Texas wedge, which is a putter. And he putted it to 4 feet, and that act of doing that enabled him to win the tournament. And that was very cool. Michael, how often do people take out putters? And 30 feet off the green.
Justin Leonard used to do it at that tournament all the time.
Yeah, it's at the Colonial.
It depends on how good you are with your wedge and what you're trying to set up. So I would love to see what's behind that pin location for him. I didn't watch this.
Yeah.
Normally you'd see, particularly, he's got a great short game. But I think that just shows you a recognition of the position he was in, and trying to secure the next putt, trying to say, I want to guarantee that four-footer, not necessarily leave that two-footer downhill behind the hole or side hole.
So it was very, very, very nice. And I also watched the ending of the senior tournament, the senior PGA tournament here at Trump National, which used to be Lowe's Island. Bernard Langer beat Vijay Singh, beat him by a couple of shots. And then we got to watch Steve Sands interview Bernard Langer.
Oh, how about that?
So it was
that?
Great to see Sands on TV.
Moment.
You know, that was nice.
And that was Langer's ninth major title on the senior tour.
Senior majors, stop. You know, stop.
Okay. Well, I guess Gary Player was upset because he doesn't feel like he got credit for 3 wins that he had.
What do you think, Michael? Senior majors.
Senior majors are tough. They change names all the time. And
nothing called the KitchenAid anything should be a major. Nothing.
Gary Player does have a point, though. With the history of golf, you don't get to decide the historical relevance of a tournament until years have passed. So you do have to grandfather some of those tournaments in and give, you know, someone makes that decision, and he might have a point there.
All right. Are we done with news?
We are indeed.
Did a very good job with news. Let's do the read here. This is the Father's Day.
What? Should we not lock out like we always do?
Oh, yeah. Okay, so we'll be back. We'll be back
Stop bossing him around.
We'll be back with the old guy segment. I am Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is an Omaha steak read. We've been getting... Who sent us Omaha steaks the other day? One of the Littles sent us Omaha steaks,
really?
Which is very, very nice.
Right,
Gary? You went home with a bunch,
yes,
of it.
Yes, I did.
I love those.
Yes, I did as well. Thank you.
Last year when we were... maybe 2 years ago when we were doling them out, I got a bunch, and we cooked them up, steaks and burgers.
Well, we
and
have
dogs.
Another box here
Chris,
at Chatter.
You didn't cook them.
They cook up.
No, obviously
servants.
Not. I had
Chris,
somebody handle
we can
it.
Give some stuff out today because we have another box, but
Nigel didn't mention that.
Didn't Randall do it? Somebody named
Randall
and I've forgotten it. So that's very, very nice. Anyway, dads love steak, and if you're trying to find the perfect gift for Father's Day, we have it right here. Let me tell you about Omaha Steaks and how this Father's Day, for only $49.99, you can get my limited time Father's Day package when you go to omahasteaks.com and you enter Tony K in the search bar to apply the savings. Omaha Steaks has all the best cuts of beef. They have bison from the Golden Plains. They have seafood. They have poultry. They have pork, veal, and lamb, vegetables. They even give you the option to customize for your dad. We made the steak. Remember, Michael, made this steak fries, the Omaha steak fries last
good.
Night.
Ooh.
They were very, very good.
Sound very good.
Here's what you get. I'm going to read this stuff because you're getting Omaha Steaks is giving you a limited time offer for Father's Day. This is an amazing deal. You end up getting 80% off Father's Day steak package, which includes, here we go, two tender mild filet mignons, 2 bold beefy top sirloins, 4 crispy chicken fried steaks, 4 juicy boneless pork chops, 4 all beef Omaha steak burgers, which are very, very good, 4 award-winning gourmet jumbo franks, 12 ounces of all beef meatballs. Had those, liked those a lot too. 1 pound of steakhouse fries, 4 made from scratch caramel apple tartlets, 1 Omaha steak seasoning packet, and get 4 additional burgers for free. So you're going to get a total of 8. Again, get this limited time package for only $49.99 when you go to omahasteaks.com. You type Tony K in the search bar. You add Father's Day package to your cart. The offer ends soon. Go to omahasteaks.com. Type in Tony K in the search bar. Grab your dad, fire up the grill. Or in my case, I grab Michael and he fires up the grill.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
These are the four tops. This is Old Guy Radio. I'm sorry, these are the Isley Brothers. This is This Old Heart of Mine. Nigel said he would surprise me today. The Isley Brothers, there were 3 or 4 Isley Brothers. The one that I remember was named O'Kelly because it was just such a cool name. O'Kelly Isley. This is one of the greatest shake your hip songs in the history of
Fredo
music. The Isley Brothers had Shout, and the Isley Brothers had This Old Heart of Mine, and that's enough, isn't it?
Right. You know? And It's Your Thing, which Randolph, was later for them.
Randolph, Vernon, and Marvin.
What about O'Kelly?
Yeah, O'Kelly was in there.
I don't know if any of them are alive.
In the area of critical commentary, this song,
great song,
originally written for the Supremes, they said, "Nah, we'd rather not record it right now."
Good.
The Isley Brothers did. This was the only song, the only hit they recorded while they were with Motown Records, and they left and formed their own label. So this was the only Motown hit they had.
Good job out of you to
Several
put that song
of them,
there.
I believe, are still alive, Tone, because good. they're playing a show in October.
They've got to be
presumably
in their,
they're alive.
It's
their
Ronald 70s. And Ernie who are out there.
They've got to be in their 70s. Okay, there's a couple of things that I want to talk about, and we broached these subjects with Wilbon, and we're going to talk about them amongst ourselves now. And the first one is Tiger Woods. At some point today, there will probably be the release of a police report that'll clarify many of our questions,
maybe
though not
some
all.
Dash cam video.
But here is what Tiger Woods has, well, this is what, in a statement released by Tiger Woods' publicist, Barry Zwerluga has this story today, and very, very good. Tiger says alcohol was not involved. He was arrested for driving under the influence. By the way, driving under the influence, you could have the influence of something else. It doesn't have to be alcohol. In a statement released in Woods' name, it said, "What happened was an unexpected reaction to prescribed medications. I didn't realize the mix of medications had affected me so strongly." This is Mark Steinberg released these things and says he wanted to clarify the situation, but there's nothing further to provide right now. In this statement, Tiger Woods writes this: "I understand the severity of what I did and I take full responsibility for my actions. I want the public to know that alcohol was not involved. I would like to apologize with all my heart to my family, friends, and the fans. I expect more from myself too." A couple of things come up. Is alcohol involved? And you heard Mike Wilbon say he doesn't want to know anymore about this. I do. Tiger Woods is always in public. What Tiger Woods says constantly in public is that he wants to be a good father. He brings this up all the time. I don't mind if he drinks. And by the way, I'll get to the prescription drug thing in a second because I've stated my position on it. I don't care if he drinks. Take a driver. Take somebody with you. You have enough money to take somebody with you. It is very possible that this prescription pain medication that he's on is really strong and with just a small amount of alcohol could work in a terrible combination. This also happened at 3 a.m.
Yep.
I think it's important to ask yourself, well, what was he doing out at 3 a.m? I mean, am I wrong on this? Doesn't three in the morning... That mugshot is that's like a Nick Nolte mugshot. That's a bad mugshot.
He looks rough.
Right. 3 a.m. Yeah. Where are you coming from? Where are you going
Good. It is true. Nothing good happens. Anytime you see.
And by the way, he's in jail till 11 in the morning.
Yikes.
Yeah.
What was that about?
Yeah, we don't know we don't know the circumstances. I mean, you don't know.
Do you think we're going to learn things?
You bet. He looks pretty whacked out. He looks like he's in rough shape.
You
got
to keep in mind, by the time they're taking that shot, it's now close to 4 in the morning. I mean,
tired.
He could just be tired.
And he knows, too. It's like, this is not going to be some under the radar incident.
I'm sorry, I don't, and I'm not at all attempting to make light of the situation, but I have to ask you guys this because I thought it when I first saw the mugshot, and we actually had this conversation at my house yesterday. In the event you are a famous person, you both are, you're on television. God forbid you find yourself in a situation where you're having a mugshot taken.
Don't want it.
You have to smile, don't you?
Yes.
But I mean, then if you smile... I don't know how many they take.
If you
smile, I don't know what they pick.
If you smile, you can...
I don't think you get a choice.
People who smile, you look like a maniac.
You definitely do.
I mean, that's the problem.
But you can't... I mean, look at that shot, man. You can't, like...
But he...
Yikes.
I'm not sure he was
I root for him to come back and play
faculties.
This is not... I mentioned this before. Michael Phelps had this happen to him twice. This happens to people.
In his 20s. There's a difference.
This happens to people, but you would say to yourself, boy, have somebody drive you if you know you're going to go out. That's why I may be inclined to be sympathetic in this and say that maybe it wasn't alcohol, maybe it was these drugs.
Yeah,
but
the
what
time
drugs, what drugs is he on?
But
is he on?
The dash cam footage could be problematic for him.
Yeah.
Have
you seen any reports as to how cooperative he was
no,
or wasn't? I mean,
nothing.
I saw in his statement.
Oh, he thanked all the police.
Yeah, in his statement, he thanked them for their professionalism.
But in the moment, I mean, I'm sure he was, I think it would come out by now if he was not cooperative, but we don't know any real details other than the mugshot and the statement.
Right? I know Tiger's in his early 40s, but I do want to just remind us that the choices he makes after hours in terms of if he wants to be out at 3 in the morning, there is a responsible way to do that. And I don't know enough information to exactly understand what he might have been under the influence of at that point.
It doesn't automatically mean it's alcohol.
Just because I don't choose to be out at 3 a.m. doesn't mean that somebody can't. You see this a lot with particularly kids who are partying or going out in safe ways or traveling at that hour. So I just want us to recognize that.
Okay.
I would add this. I think at this point, I would be surprised and disappointed if, in fact, there were alcohol involved. I mean,
he said categorically.
So, right.
He didn't say
alcohol was not a factor in the arrest.
Right.
You know, which could maybe he had a glass of wine and he had been on a painkiller and they could react and cause something. But he just said categorically there was. You know, alcohol was not involved in any way. So
I don't know that that's an automatic thing you find out. There, he was arrested for driving under the influence of something.
But there will be a police report, and a police report might say we pulled him over because he was weaving. We noticed the smell of alcohol in the car. He did refuse a breathalyzer. That has been reported.
Okay. So we'll see on that. We'll see on that. The other thing that it leads me to is, again, the amount of painkillers, prescription medications that he's on, it is hard to wean oneself off that.
Yeah.
You know, to go back and play golf all the time. That's right. Don't you think that that's a hard thing to do?
Yeah. And I mean, this would suggest, no matter what the circumstances surrounding it, this would suggest for people who think, you know, he's on the road to recover, you know, this
Which
would
I
suggest he's
for.
A long, long way
yeah.
away.
Yeah. And I, you know what? I understand Wilbon's reaction.
That's
that
hard.
You are deadened to what has gone on with this guy, and you can't this the fall for him
slow motion collapse.
It's really something.
Well, the SB Nation headline to this story, I thought, hit the nail on the head, and they said Tiger Woods DUI arrest elicits bad jokes but mostly sadness.
When was the first
2009.
So, I mean, it's been 8 years.
Thanksgiving,
long time. Let me get to the death of Frank DeFord, and let me be as appraising of Frank DeFord as I've ever been of anyone. Frank DeFord, for me, there were a lot of very famous people who died this weekend, very famous people. Jim Bunning died this weekend. Jim Bunning had no hitters in both leagues. Jim Bunning went from being an icon in baseball to being a senator from the state of Kentucky. This is not at all dissimilar to what John Glenn did. That John Glenn went from being an icon in heroism and being an astronaut to being a longtime senator in Ohio. Jim Bunning, big guy. Whether you liked his politics or not, Jim Bunning, big guy. It's a big new Brzezinski. He was Secretary of State. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was not on the level necessarily of Henry Kissinger, but on the next level. That's a very high level, a very important person in this country, an advisor at least to Jimmy Carter and to many others, right, Chris? To many others.
Oh, gosh, yes. I mean, and I would say certainly for a new generation of folks, his daughter's success, his featuring on Morning Joe,
yes,
reintroduced him to a number of people. So it was sort of
big
a second.
Guy.
Yeah.
Greg Allman.
Oh, yeah.
Big
yeah.
guy.
Yeah.
Greg Allman, the Allman Brothers, the whole notion of Southern rock. I mean, they're at the apex
Absolutely.
Of that. Greg Allman, just this morning, Manuel Noriega.
Yep.
The country was consumed with him for a long period of time as a dictator of Panama, where we were trying to work something out with the Panama Canal, a thorn in our side. And then you find out a paid informant, you know, worked with the CIA, which I had no idea. And all of those people, I could go on and on about all those people. None of them affected me the way Frank DeFord did. When Frank DeFord was at his best, he wrote long-form profiles. This is what I got into sports writing to be. What Frank DeFord did is, and I couldn't do it as well as Frank DeFord, and nobody could. Nobody could. At that period of time, in the 1960s and 70s and 80s, at Sports Illustrated, with Dan Jenkins and Curry Kirkpatrick and Frank DeFord, they were the best. I mean, you might have other favorites, depending on your age. At my age, those three were the best. And it doesn't even matter who was the best of the three. They were the best. They were the Mount Rushmore. Only three. You didn't need a fourth. They were that good. And I knew Frank DeFord, and I loved his work. And you heard Wilbon say that he dressed up in an obvious shot at some people in town that I won't even take, but you should know who that guy is. Frank DeFord always wore purple in his outfits, loved the color purple. He grew up in Baltimore. He went to Princeton. Enough guys at Sports Illustrated were from Princeton. There was a great pipeline to Princeton at that period of time. And Frank DeFord was just a great and thoughtful writer. You need to read Sally Jenkins today in the Washington Post. And Sally knew Frank well because Sally's dad, Dan Jenkins, knew they all hung out together. They knew each other very well for a very long period of time. And Sally talks about the way DeFord wrote and how he would pick people that were difficult people and he would humanize these people. He would not gloss over their flaws at all. But by the end, there was a certain sympathy that was created in the way they spoke to Frank DeFord and the way he wrote about it. Just an absolutely brilliant, brilliant writer. Younger people than I will know him from NPR. I know him as Sports Illustrated. And I know him from The National. And you heard Mike say how flattered Mike was that DeFord knew who he was. I have the exact same feeling. I mean, Frank DeFord was large and larger than life in my business. 6'4", 6'5", wow. Dressed up, looked like Clark Gable,
yes.
Understood the power of movie stardom, understood it very well, because when he grew up, movies, not television, were the biggest things. And Frank was large and graceful and brilliant as a writer, and never loud, didn't take over a restaurant or anything like that. Very elegant and dapper in everything that he did. And one night in 1988 or 1989, and I'm not sure which night this was or which year this was, but he came to my house and he offered me a job at The National. And The National was going to be a sports daily, and it worked for about a year and a half.
18 months. Yeah.
In my basement to this day, I have a box from the street that was stolen from the street with the last edition of The National. The headline is, "We Had a Ball." Frank DeFord hired a bunch of people. He hired John Feinstein. He hired Mike Lupica. He hired very good people around the country to be regional reporters from where they were, to be beat writers. Frank wrote a column for it, as did other people. Frank offered me a job to do that, to write a column. And I stayed at the Washington Post. I was incredibly flattered that he offered me this job. And I remember that it was tough for him. There were 7-foot ceilings. And when you're 6'4 or 6'5, you sort of look up and you wonder, am I going to hit this ceiling in the basement? And he stayed down. We would talk for like a couple of hours. I was really tempted. I was really, really tempted. As it turned out, had I taken it, it would have had no effect. I mean, everybody went back to where they were. Yeah. You know what I mean? It was sort of like an extended dream sequence. and everybody went back and got the same jobs because they were very highly valued and they were all very good people. And the same, I'm sure, would have happened to me as well. I chose to stay at the Washington Post at that period of time where I was very happy. I was writing. In fact, I used it to get a style column. I did. I threatened, I'm sure.
Attaboy.
And I used it to get the style column, which I held for a couple of years and enjoyed that very, very much. And had no regrets of not going with Frank, but always wished them well. Norman Chad was the breakout star of the National,
I felt.
How
long did it last, Tom?
I would say a year and a half to 2 years.
Yeah,
year
no, it wasn't even
so
that.
Not long.
I think Norman was the breakout star of the National.
I was a sophomore in college in 1989 in New Jersey, suburban New York.
You bought it.
Oh my God, it was all we read.
It was just manna from heaven. I mean, this was before the internet, kids.
Of course.
And it was better. USA Today was around. And
no, this is better.
Group.
They hired better people.
1,000 times better. This was the best writers.
Yeah.
And it was just,
yep.
I was, oh,
and I would argue, I mean, I would totally, Tony, defer to your take on this, but I would argue that on some level, this thing that we're doing now and the explosion of sports talk radio, granted, the National was, I mean, I don't want to say it was a failure, but I mean, it did not work. It was gone in a year and a half.
It was bankrolled by the guy who owned Univision.
But in some ways, it gave birth to all of that.
Yeah, sure.
You know, the sports blogs, the long-form stuff, like what Simmons does in terms of writing.
You need to read Sally.
I mean, it's a great piece.
It's pointless for me to quote it. She says it far better than I would say it. It's a beautiful piece of writing about a guy who wrote beautiful pieces. And Frank DeFord always wrote beautiful pieces. There were some things he did. Frank wrote smaller pieces. He used to love to go to tennis. He used to love to go to the Davis Cup when Davis Cup was important. And he would write what I would consider long pieces, but they were basically deadline pieces. His skill was enormous. There was Frank DeFord, Dan Jenkins, Curry Kirkpatrick. They're the best.
I love
the best.
In that Sally piece how she talks about the DeFord Connors profile.
Yeah.
Jimmy Connors profile.
I remember that.
It's just
raised
really
by women to beat men. That's the first line in the piece.
Right.
Raised by women to beat men about his grandmother and his mother raising him to be a tennis player. The Freudian psychology in that piece is absolutely brilliant. I mean, he did a great piece on Howard Cosell. When Howard Cosell got in trouble for calling Alvin Garrett, and when he said, look at that little monkey go, if you remember that, and this caused an enormous hoo-ha, particularly in the Washington Post, and Howard Cosell said, that was a term of endearment. I had no idea of the racial connotations. Now he would, and everybody would, and all of that. Frank DeFord came out and wrote a long piece about Chris Everett in which he called her a little monkey. And he did that deliberately for Howard Cosell to ease the pain that Howard Cosell was going through. I mean, Frank was just a great writer. Just an absolutely great writer. And
really did have a second career at NPR. I mean, a lot of younger people know him from NPR.
And also with Brian Gumbel, Brian Gumbel in Real Sports. When Nigel found out about this yesterday, he said, you want me to get Brian Gumbel? I said, that would be great. And Brian's out of the country.
Yeah, traveling overseas.
He's out of the country. So, I mean.
And Frank, by the way, contributing to NPR until very recently. Like, I think his last report was a couple of weeks ago. He announced his retirement.
Yeah, I mean, again, I know him as a writer. And he had one of his books, Everybody's All-American, was made into a movie of some consequence. So that was...
Yeah, who was it? Quaid?
Yeah, one of the Quaid brothers. I guess Dennis Quaid was in it. And who was the...
John Goodman?
Was John Goodman in it? Everybody's All-American?
Who was the one?
He also had a heartbreaking book about the death of his daughter called Alex, The Life of a Child.
That's right.
Just absolutely heartbreaking. And that is in the obit today. A piece of that is in the obituary in the Washington Post. Just read them both. I mean, a great, great writer.
Jessica Lange.
And I just, for folks listening, if you check my Twitter feed, I retweeted the Times obit of DeFord, too, which is also worth reading.
Just, terrific writer. We will take a break, and we will come back with jingles and email. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Washington, oh Washington, how come all your sports teams blowing? Regular season they don't show it, then the playoffs come
It's choking dogs in Washington.
The laughter from everybody
Washington. It's sad because it's true.
Red Rockers eat Russ Sertz me undies. Beal and Wall get painted over. Yeah, when the playoffs come, it's choking dogs in Washington.
Sean Morrissey and Frederick Maryland with a beautiful rendition of Galveston by
really pretty
Glenn Campbell. That's really well done.
Yes.
Really well done. Before we get into the mailbag, I'd like to say thanks to Michael Wilbon for coming on the show today. I'd also like to thank our sponsors, Omaha Steaks and SeatGeek. Please support them the way they support our podcast. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of the Tony Kornheiser Show wherever you listen to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Play. If you listen to the show through iTunes, please leave us a review. Very nice breakfast crowd here. Thank you all for coming.
Thank you guys for coming today.
From Jim Gross in Allen, Texas. Hey, Chris, did you hear all the cheeserie? No red wine in the fourth tier at the Jerry Dome.
Oh, I couldn't hear you from up there.
There was a guy at the restaurant I went to who gave me an online La Cheeserie and said he didn't want to come over and interrupt our dinner, but he wanted to know that.
No, you'd like him being interrupting your dinner, don't you?
This is from Phil, and this is a very long name. I will butcher it. Chulramountry, can you please tell Christopher Michael Saliza that I got YouTube club tickets for free in Dallas? Why do I care that Saliza will be at the same concert as me? I still have no idea. The show stinks. Eat it, Saliza, which is
fair.
Typical. Jamie Armada in Wauwatosa, Wisconsin, listening to last Thursday Pod Save America, and Dan Pfeiffer, formerly of the Obama administration, was trashing one of Saliza's tweets and dropped the bomb that he spent many hours at Georgetown playing basketball with Chris, and bombshell that Chris is a pretty good basketball player. What?
Eat it.
That's back before whoever. I was fat.
I am no longer fat. I'm down 15 pounds.
Nice. Look great.
Thanks for telling me I was fat before.
Andre Maurer in Kingsport, Tennessee. My son Jack celebrates his 10th birthday today every year, including the day of his birth. You've been kind enough to give him a piece of advice for the upcoming year. Our family favorite was when you told him on his third birthday to, quote, find something you're good at and stand up on a table and rub it in everyone's face.
Sounds
do you have
right.
any wisdom to bestow to Jack as he enters double digits? You guys have children that age. What would you advise?
Listen to your father is what I would say.
That's probably
hasn't worked for my
kids. I told my kids this weekend to do what they love, and my younger son, who's four, says, "Is there? I'm not kidding, direct quote, is there a job where you get paid to say but?" So chip off the old block.
From Julia Parker. I'm 15 years old from Baltimore. My dad is a lawyer little. My family and I were at Chatter for the first time on Saturday. We loved it. Extraordinary food and service. Unfortunately, we did not get to see you there as you didn't bother to show up. But all in all, it was a great night. Since we did not see you, could you give a birthday shout out to my dad, Noah? He would be thrilled indeed.
Happy birthday, Noah.
Ernest Repepe. I live in the Berkshires of Western Massachusetts. I work part-time at Canyon Ranch Resort and Spa in Lenox, Massachusetts, putting guests through the rigor of a high ropes course and climbing wall. As the guests arrived, we did introductions. Three of the eight were Nathan, Andrew, and Lizzie Bubis. Can it be, I wondered. Of course, I asked if they were the progeny of the socialite and practically squealed with joy to find out that, in fact, they were. They could not have been nicer and all did very well on the course. And upon completion, Andrew and Nathan accompanied me to the spa in search of their father. I, of course, wanted photographic evidence of this fortuitous event. We cut through the pool facility to access the main spa area. And much to my shock, Andrew yelled, "Hey, Dad, this guy's a TK Little." Alan and the woman to whom he's related by marriage were in the middle of an aqua-sized class complete with absurdly oversized foam dumbbells and pool noodles.
I'd like a picture of that.
Andrew insisted that taking a picture at that point would be okay, but I didn't think a picture of Alan in an alarming state of undress would be appropriate. Nonetheless, it was a thrill that few would understand, as I quickly realized, having shared this story with several colleagues. Is this guy a celebrity? Well, kind of. Well, what would I know from him? Well, you wouldn't, never mind. The Bubises were so great, I even ran into Lizzie later in the weekend. She couldn't have been sweeter. The degrees of separation to Mr. Tony just keep getting fewer. For example, my full-time job as a PE teacher in Latham, New York, my former student at Shaker High School is Joe Bianchino, who I know has visited the show when you were in Rockville. Fewer and fewer degrees, a little for life. From David Sampson, I'm a current listener from Westport, Kentucky, who remembers your New York Times run fondly. Before Mike and the Mag Dog, WFAN was off to a rocky start with some interesting hosts. Drive Time was Pete Franklin, whose curmudgeonly ways make you look like Prince Charming. He was a hit in Cleveland, but fanned in New York. Jim Lampley tried the show with the Hotel California, and Greg Gumbel was dropped as well. Seems one could only talk New York sports, which was the beauty of Mike and the Dog. that and the friction-filled interplay. But the real founding father of sports talk in New York, and this is true, was Bill Mazur, who was a whiz when it came to all things New York sports. Now, that's old guy radio. The other pioneer from those days is still going as Bob Wolf. So happy for the podcast after years of having you and then not, etc. Let's take a moment to salute the double play combination of Horace Clark, who you mentioned, and Jerry Kenny. That's very, very nice. From Mike Drago, or Drago, in Reading, Pennsylvania. My back is killing me. It's affecting my golf game. Now that you're a doctor, perhaps you can help fix both my bulging disc and my slice all in one shot. Mm. My birthday is coming up next week. You should expect a call from me then. Yes, please, everybody, call me on your birthday.
Make an appointment.
Yes. Yeah. If you're out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always, do wear white.
But we don't have the chutzpah to do it.
So she bought me bullets and she made corrections. She had problems with their cruel derision. So she bought a scalpel and she made incisions. Honey, I'd say crazy doll, but you've got something different. I'd say complicated, but that's your kind of rhythm. I'd say lost in. You'd say love, but you're crazy not to see that you're crazy just like me. She started fires. She had problems feeling awful sleepless. So she bought a shovel and she buried secrets. Honey, I'd say crazy doll, but you've got something different. I'd say complicated, but that's your kind of rhythm. I'd say lost in. You're crazy just like me.
crazy dubber. You got something different. I'd say complicated. That's your kind of rhythm. I'd say lost in. You say love, but you're crazy not to see. You're crazy just like I'd say crazy dog, but you got something different.